Thank you. So normally this sort of talk I give to mathematicians, so it's a very interesting possibility for me to try to talk about these connections between number theory and some physics aspects of the moduli space of Higgs bundles to mostly physicists. So please feel free to ask questions. I try to be as elementary as possible. So what's interesting about Higgs bundles from the mathematical perspective, that they have been introduced more than basically 24 years ago, and in the beginning there was not much physics in them. So I mean, it was introduced by Nigel Hitchin following some mathematical ideas of trying to construct infinite dimensional hyperkähler quotients, but really the motivation was mathematics, and for a long time there was no clear application of the moduli space of Higgs bundles of physics. So of course they appeared in some places, like in Seiberg-Witten theory we heard about, but only very recently, starting with the work of Kapustin and Witten, we start to see the aspects of moduli space of Higgs bundles appear in physics, and I'm very happy to see in this conference many more other parts of ideas in physics now have to do with the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which is the total space of the Hitchin system. But there is a parallel development with Higgs bundles, which is equally exciting for mathematicians, is that their arithmetic properties somehow are fundamentally related to some of the major aspects of number theory, namely to the Legrand's program. And so I will also mention very briefly the connection with the work of Ngo, who famously recently proved the fundamental lemma in the Legrand's program, which used the arithmetic of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And basically the same sort of ideas, topological ideas at least, he used, which will also appear in this talk. We of course already heard about these connections between arithmetic and physics, for example in Samson's talk. If you remember, he was discussing that in the integrable system of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, there is a certain aspect, certain these equivariant integrals he was talking about are governed by certain representation theory of things like GLN over QP, which is of course arithmetically a very central object. So today the sort of representation theory we will see will be simpler. It will not be GLN QP, but it will be GLN over the finite field. And this somehow, so the point will be that we will do arithmetic not on the Higgs moduli spaces today, but on the character variety, which was also called the Hitchin space yesterday. So let me introduce you first the spaces I will be studying, and then I will phrase the main problem. So we will be looking at two spaces. Again, both of them were called Hitchin spaces in this conference. So the one was, so what we will do, we will fix the Riemann surface of genus G, and we will, for this talk, we will fix the group to be GLN. So what we will consider, the moduli space of Higgs bundles mathematically can be constructed by a GIT quotient construction, is the moduli space of semi-stable rank n and degree d Higgs bundles. So what it means that this is a rank n vector bundle E, which has degree d. And then we will also have a so-called Higgs field, that's the name Higgs bundles, which is going to be a section of the endomorphism bundle of them, of the vector bundle E tensor with the canonical bundle. So that's this auxiliary field, is the Higgs field, and there is a stability condition on such a pair. And then when you take all of them, there is a natural structure of an algebraic variety on the moduli space of such. So this is Nigel's description of the solution of his self-duality equations, which he really got from physics by reducing the four-dimensional Young-Mills equations to two dimensions. And then this is a very nice algebraic geometrical way to think about solutions being one-to-one correspondence with such algebraic geometrical objects. And of course the major, in fact for him, that was the major motivation to consider this space, was that it was obtained by an infinite dimensional hyperkähler quotient. So somehow by construction this space carried a hyperkähler structure. And then what turns out is that the other complex structures also have moduli theoretical definitions. So in fact, there are two ways to think about the other complex structures mathematically, algebraic geometrically, and I'm going to give you one of them. And this is the variety of representations of the fundamental group of the Riemann surface into GLN modulo automorphism of the representation. So this is what we call the character variety. We have seen this variety, again, it was referred to at the Hitchin space. So now what you see here is less conceptual but more explicit. We will consider the fundamental group of the Riemann surface generated by these two G generators. So we will have two G matrices, one for each generator. And the single relation in the fundamental group of the Riemann surface, which is this order product of the commutators of these matrices. Many, if it was an honest representation, it would be just the identity. But to be able to match this degree D condition here, we will have a slight twist. We will want this to be a central matrix with an eigenvalue 2 pi I d over n. You can also think about this, that what we do is that we have a puncture, and around the puncture we have this mild monodromy assumption that we have this central conjugacy class of this form. But the nice thing about presenting the fundamental group and therefore the character variety this way, that this is an algebraic variety, is very simple. It's given by one equation, one single, although non-commutative equation. And we will see that this really, this simplicity of the variety will help us to study its arithmetic. So, but before going there, let me really say this fact I mentioned already, that that these varieties are, so they are completely different varieties as algebraic varieties, but they have the same underlying manifold. And in the case which we will be focusing on, when D and N are coprime, these varieties will be always non-singular, nice smooth varieties, complex varieties. And then you can formulate this.
What about division by D? First of all, determinant must be 1. The division by D.
Yes, but this is determinant 1, right?
Yeah, must be determinant 1, of course, yeah. Right? But here I see something like division by D. What is it?
This says this central matrix has determinant 1.
No, it's identity.
Oh, that's the identity matrix? Oh, I see. Okay.
The division is a little more slope, you can see next.
Okay, it's interesting.
So the determinant of the left hand side and the right hand side, then immediately came to a contradiction.
Okay.
Excuse me, please. What is degree of a Higgs bundle? Is it just degree of bundle?
Yes, it's degree of the vector bundle E. So if D was 0, which usually would be the case, then it would be the honest representation variety, and it would be degree 0 Higgs bundles. But the point is that this would, for example, have a trivial representation, which would be a highly singular point in the variety.
But they would be okay as stacks, right?
Yeah, you can study them as stacks. But you will see that for all...
If you have this Hodge theorem.
Yes, you will have a certain form of this. It's a little bit more difficult to formulate, but there will be a one-to-one correspondence if you do it properly. But for the sort
D and L relative prime to each other, then it's a stable, not semi-stable, but stable case.
Then everything will be stable indeed.
But you impose this.
And then I impose this, but a priori I didn't impose it. You are right. The reason that this variety will be non-singular, that when D and N are coprime, every semi-stable object will be stable. So there will be no strictly semi-stable objects. That's the reason it will be non-singular. Okay. So, but again, if you are a differential geometer or a physicist, you want to have a smooth manifold, I guess, if you are talking about a hyperkähler metric. We really have a difficult way to think about hyperkähler stacks, for example. So the point is that this one-to-one correspondence between these varieties is really this fact of the hyperkähler metric existing on here. And in the other complex structure, we have a representation of that complex manifold as this algebraic variety. So this non-Abelian Hodge theorem is really non-trivial, and that's somehow heart of the subject is due to all these people in mathematics. Let me give you just an example. This will be somehow a running example all over. When G is 1, then we have a single commutator here, and then you have this twisted central element, and then by a version of a finite version of the Heisenberg group, or I mean the Stone von Neumann theorem, you can prove that up to a scalar multiplication there will be a unique solution of this equation. And so what it says is that just the scalars will give you the character variety. So the variety for every G is just going to be the torus C star square. And correspondingly, the moduli space of Higgs bundles, its points can be identified with the cotangent bundle of the elliptic curve, which is just its own Jacobian in when genus equals one. So it's the cotangent bundle of the elliptic curve. So that's our Higgs moduli space. So this is very simple, of course, because it's always just a surface. But for higher genus, you will see higher genus and higher n, you will have all kinds of high dimensional varieties. So let me now formulate the question, which actually should be on the first question you should understand if you're interested in the topology of these things. So in Samson's talk, we heard about equivariant intersection numbers of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. Those invariants somehow should explain to you what the cohomology ring of the variety is. But before studying the cohomology ring, the even simpler question, which is still open, is to understand the cohomology groups. What are the dimensions of the cohomology groups? What are the Betti numbers of these varieties? And that's the problem I am going to pose, because it's still open. We don't know what are the Betti numbers of the moduli space of Higgs bundles for every n. I mean, we know it for now, very recently, NS4 was completed, NS2 was done by Nigel Hitchin, NS3 by a student of his, and only this year we have a complete calculation, then n equals 4. But this is very difficult. It seems not possible to continue further, but we will see. Anyway, this is an open question to find the Betti numbers of the moduli space of Higgs bundles.
What is the meaning of the isomorphism sign in the middle, C star square?
This?
Yeah.
Well, this is that same diffeomorphism here.
But they're not topologically equivalent.
They are topologically equivalent, right? This is C star square, and this is T star of the elliptic curve is circle times circle.
C star square.
Yeah, C star square is a complex torus. So these are diffeomorphic, but somehow algebraic really different as varieties.
I thought that the Antonescu had some
problems. Oh, that will be the physics part in this talk.
Okay.
So the second part of the talk, first part will be a study of the character variety, the arithmetic properties, and that way we'll come to a conjecture on the Betti numbers. And the physics part of the talk will be an explanation of work by Diaconescu and others, which gives a physics explanation of the same sort of conjectures, but on the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So, but for me, really the exciting thing is that we have a conjecture which was made purely on the arithmetic of the character variety. Really, you will see in a moment, we will really study this variety over a finite field. And then when you compare it with the moduli space of Higgs bundles and recent work of Diaconescu and others, we will see that there will be exact same conjectures appear in a physics context. And for us, for me, it's really exciting. And you will see explicit formulas arising, and the meaning of the two formulas in the two stories will be completely different. So let me show you how we arrive to a conjecture on the Betti numbers of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, but in fact we arrived it by studying the Betti numbers of the character variety, which is the same by this non-abelian Hodge theorem, the Betti numbers of the moduli space of Higgs bundle.
And that's only the smooth case.
And then we can somehow all these methods, both Diaconescu's and ours. But Diaconescu has some ideas what to do in the non-coprime case, but that's mathematically not precise yet. But really, mathematically, the problem in the singular case, we don't really know what's the right cohomology theory. It's not the trivial ones you would think. Maybe it's intersection. Maybe it's intersection cohomology, but it's very hard to calculate. Actually, to my knowledge, there is NS2 was not completely done. Intersection cohomology of moduli space of Higgs bundles seems to be very difficult to calculate, but it probably is the right one, but no one managed to calculate it. I will show you that somehow we will see an independence of D. So let me show you then. Okay, let me start with the arithmetic approach. So we will, in order to do the arithmetic approach, what we need is an extra structure on the cohomology of the character variety, or in fact on the cohomology of every algebraic variety, there is an extra structure. Namely, there is an extra filtration. Oops. There is an extra filtration called the weight filtration. So this is a new structure which is very hard to explain in terms of global analysis. It's an algebraic geometrical structure. In fact, it is sensitive to the algebraic geometrical structure, not just the underlying complex analytical structure of the variety. So what we have is this extra filtration, and we will see that that filtration is somehow which is the route towards arithmetic and somehow which will be very important for us. So here is this filtration on the cohomology, and then what we do, and this is also somehow rhymes very well recent progress in physics, that we want to refine our original invariant. Originally we wanted to know about the Betti numbers of the variety, say of the character variety, but to refine it, in fact it will be much more interesting to look at this what we call the mixed Hodge polynomial of the variety. So that is, now we will encode not just the dimensions of the cohomology groups, but the dimension of the graded pieces of this filtration. Okay, so this is then good because it's really a refinement of the Poincaré polynomial. If you forget about the weight, so Q will remember the weight of these of the filtration, then we will be back to our original Poincaré polynomial.
So does that depend on the complex structure of that?
It depends on the algebraic structure. So this is actually extremely crucial, and let me point out this third space, which seems to be called the same in this conference. So there is the third variety you attach, that moduli space of flat connections. And the surprising thing is that the weight filtration on this, although it's of course is isomorphic with the cohomology of the character variety, but the weight filtrations are different. So you have two algebraic varieties which are analytically the same, underlying complex analytical manifold the same, but the weight filtrations are different. Here you can prove the algebraic structure gives a pure weight filtration. That is this is what you always see for a smooth projective variety. Basically WK is the same as HK, and WK minus 1 is trivial. So weight filtration is just the degree filtration on this side. No, it's in the middle, it's WK.
Oh, the one in the middle.
One in the middle. I mean, you have two stories. One is non-compact, and then you go above the middle, and one is projective, but singular, and then you go below the middle. When you are both smooth and singular, you are at the middle. So the amazing thing which really distinguishes these two varieties is that the weight filtration here is pure, but here we will see, it's absolutely non-pure. It's a non-pure. It's really non-trivial, the weight filtration on this side. So that's really an invariant of the algebraic structure of the variety. So let me show you then what's an arithmetic way to think about the mixed Hodge polynomial. Unfortunately, we cannot get the mixed Hodge polynomial by arithmetic means. What we can get is another specialization of the mixed Hodge polynomial, the so-called E polynomial, or Serre polynomial, or virtual Hodge polynomial of the variety X. So you evaluate at t equals minus 1 now, so you will keep the weight, evaluate at t equals minus 1, it is some Euler characteristic sort of coefficients for using the pieces of the weight filtration, but what you fix is the weight, and you collect all those weight spaces for every cohomology, and that's the E polynomial of the variety. See, this is somehow an orthogonal specialization. Here you see some non-trivial things, that we substituted here 1 over q and then multiplied by q to the dimension. The reason for that honestly speaking, the E polynomial should be defined on the compactly supported cohomology of the variety, or the mixed Hodge polynomial, and then you would see the honest Euler characteristic of that. Here you already see a Poincaré duality operation. But for us, somehow, this is a more natural way to introduce the mixed Hodge polynomial. So why is E polynomial great? And even complex geometrically, it is great because it is an additive function. So this, if you have tried to calculate cohomology of varieties, then you know that this very rarely happens, that if you decompose your variety, then the cohomology groups will not add into pieces. But the E polynomial will be additive. So you can calculate the E polynomial of any variety by decomposing into disjoint locally closed subvarieties, calculate the E polynomial of each bit, and then add them together. It's really amazing. I mean, if you have calculated cohomology groups, the E polynomial is much better behaved than, say, the Poincaré polynomial or the mixed-Hodge polynomial.
Because it's error heuristic essentially, right? It is much more stable. It is plus minus.
Yes, that's right. But for example, in the case when it's pure, that is, when it's pure, this case and WK is just basically the same as HK. In that case, this thing remembers the whole Poincaré polynomial because then there's only one bit here. So somehow this is very powerful.
Have some interpretation as motivic interpretation?
That's right. This really is a function on motifs because of this additivity property. But also because the motivic property also leads to the connection with arithmetic, and that's what will come next. So this additivity is very nice in algebraic geometry, but in fact the root of the additivity is that these polynomials have a very nice explanation in terms of the arithmetic of the variety, that is just to count the points of the variety over a finite field. So let me show you then this little technical result, which will give us a very nice arithmetic meaning for the same E polynomial of the variety over the complex numbers. So this is somehow arithmetic, and I try to be very simple here. So we will think of our variety, which was X before, that was a complex variety, but we will want the same sort of complex variety, but defined by equations, and the equations we assume have not just complex numbers, but integers. So then this variety, this smooth quasi-projective variety, can be considered over the complex numbers. But the nice thing about this, because you have these defining equations with integer coefficients, you can consider it, for example, modular prime. You can consider it over the prime field Fp, or in fact, you can consider the same equations in any finite field Fq. Okay, so this might sound a little bit exotic, but the nice thing about a finite field, or even just modulo a prime, that these equations then will have finitely many solutions, so you can count them. So that's what the assumption will be. It's a strong assumption, in fact. And this is a very particular class of varieties which satisfy that over a finite field Fq, the number of solutions of these equations is some function of Q, which normally will be a very complicated function of Q. Think about an elliptic curve. Of course, it's a highly non-trivial function of how many points an elliptic curve has on a finite field. But in some nice cases, like for the character variety, this counting function will turn out to be a polynomial in Q. It's a very strong assumption, if you like, on the motif of the variety. But in a case when it is a polynomial in Q,
what would be the for the character variety? How do you define over Fq? Can you tell us?
Well, I talk about that in a moment. So for now, this is just the general theory, and then as you say, we will apply this to the character variety. But the nice thing, actually, that why we will be able to easily apply it to the character variety, because we just take that single defining equation, the matrices, and then that's an equation with integer coefficients. Okay, there will be a root of unity at the end. We will have to adjoin it into a finite field, and we'll just take the same defining equation and study it over a finite field. Instead of matrices over the complex numbers, we'll take matrices over the finite field or modular prime.
Well, why do you say it is so much exceptional? You will consider the trace of Frobenius in complexly supported cohomology, you will get this more or less, right? For many
areas, yes,
right?
Yes, but that's not a polynomial. But our assumption is
polynomial. Okay. Yeah.
Our assumption is that this number, as you say, by the Grothendieck-Lefschetz fixed point theorem, is the trace of Frobenius on eta cohomology. That's somehow which connects it to the cohomology theory.
It must be a polynomial. Yes.
But this is a strong assumption. And let me show it. Okay, then the upshot, let me really say what the upshot is. Then this polynomial, which you could just get by counting points of an equation over a finite field, is the same as the E polynomial of the variety over the complex numbers. So it's really striking. Let me show.
Projective varieties is really rare, for it must be quasi-projective.
That's right. Well, it's toric varieties, for example, have polynomial count, like rational varieties like Grassmannians. They will have, but of course, if it's not rational or something, then it will be highly non-polynomial. So let me show you one example, then this calculation is already clean. So you take this very simple equation, of course, over the complex numbers, this gives you invertible complex numbers, right? The solution of this is just invertible convex numbers. So this is the defining equation for C star over the complex numbers. But this equation has only integer coefficients, so I can consider the same equation modulo a prime, for example. So how many solutions do I have modulo a prime? Well, I have p minus 1 solutions. Again, any non-zero member in Fp will give me a unique solution. In general, over Fq, the same argument shows that the variety over the finite field is Fq minus the origin. So the number of solutions of this, the number of points of this, of course, is q minus 1. Now, this is a polynomial, so we do get that this is a polynomial count variety, so we can deduce now a result about the variety over the complex numbers, that this weight polynomial is also q minus 1. So this comes about, we have two cohomology groups here which are non-trivial, H0 and H1. And on H0, we will have a nice pure weight, but on H1, we will have a class of weight Q, and that will correspond to this minus 1 after this Poincaré duality. So we do get this Q minus 1 expression just by counting the number of solutions of this equation over a finite field.
Can you say that again? Why was it Q minus 1? From the point of view of the...
How many solutions do you have of this equation in FQ? For every non-zero element in FQ, I have a unique solution.
That I got.
And that's Q minus 1. There are Q elements in FQ, and I leave out 0. That's Q minus 1.
But why was that the expected answer for the E polynomial?
Because of the theorem. That's the...
Why does H1 have a wave filtration, you said?
Okay, so really the tricky thing here is that this has a non-pure mixed structure, meaning that on H1, well, the expected weight would be 1, right? If it was pure, it would be 1, but in fact, W1 is going to be 0, and W2 is going to be equal H1. So that has an unexpected weight of weight 2, not weight 1.
So we have Q to the 2 divided by 2.
So where you have this Poincaré duality, you have to bear in mind, right? So you have... you have a weight 1 on H0, I mean, what I mean is, okay, and then you have weight Q on H1, by Poincaré duality, this will get a minus sign, this will give you minus 1, and this one has a plus sign because it's degree 0, then this will give you Q, when you do this Poincaré duality I did there, so you get Q minus 1.
Yeah, but you have a Q to the I over 2, and I just want to make sure I understand properly that I is equal to 2.
I equals 2 in our case, therefore, that's Q. This is the weight Q here, is because I equals 2 here, and I equals 0 here, that's the weight 1. But this is an ordinary cohomology, I have to do it on compactly supported cohomology, and on compactly supported cohomology, the weight of this will be 1, and the weight of this will be Q. And then...
How do you know this filtration of H1?
Okay, so you have to know all the results of the lean. So one important thing in the lean story is that the pure part is the one which can be seen by a compactification. The pure part in this case would be W1. So how do I see that W1 is 0? So that's a theorem of the lean, that the pure part of the cohomology, so that is W1, H1, is, for example, the pure part of H1, is the one which is an image of any compactification of the variety. So you take a compactification of C star, any compactification, say smooth, let's just take P1 for example, and I take H1 of P1 and see the image of this in H1, that's the pure part. That's a non-trivial theorem because it's true for any compactification. But of course there is no H1 of P1, so this cohomology class in C star is not seen by compactification, and that's why we know a priori that it must be a trivial pure part, so it therefore must be omega 2, W2. But there is even a Hodge structure on this, and that would say that if it was pure, if it was weight 1, that there should be a 0-1 and a 1-0-1, it must be even then. So there cannot be W1. So therefore, it must be W2. So this is the sort of thing that you see for the character variety. Of course, we have already seen one example of four character when it was C star square, and we do already see that this thing has not pure mixed way structure. We do see that this variety is not algebraically the same as the corresponding Ganderham variety, which is some twisted bundle over the elliptic curve. And it has a pure mixed way structure, and this does not have a pure mixed way structure. So it has different morphisms, even complex analytical isomorphism, but not algebraic, because the weights are different on the cohomologies.
Which Katz is this? There are so many Katz.
This is the number theorist, Nick Katz in Princeton. So I must say that this result, I mean, in this form, is not that really far away from the actual Weyl conjectures. You can reduce everything to the smooth projective case, and then this is just the Weyl conjectures in this very special case when this function is a polynomial. Okay, so let me then show you and answer your question what to do for the character variety. So you recall that the character variety was given by this matrix equation, a single matrix equation of the products of the commutators equal some identity times this central element, zeta n. And then how do you then look at this as a variety defined with the integer coefficients? Well, here it is. It's the equations are really, the only equation which is not an integer is this nth root of unity, but you can actually join that into your defining ring somehow, so you can actually work with that. So now the question is, what do you have to then count in order to count the number of solutions of this equation over a finite field? Well, the points of this variety over a finite field will be solutions of these equations, but to the constraint that these matrices AI and BI are now n times n invertible matrices over the finite field FQ. So suddenly, this simple defining equation will lead us to a very simple algebraic variety, and then the good news is that there is a very nice way to count the number of solutions of such equations. Then the constraint is that the elements come from a fixed finite group, which is GNFQ, and that's the famous formula by Frobenius. So here is.
So you're going to take the product of the commutators in FQ equals some root mod p,
so
mod,
we,
mod q of the cyclotomic polynomial.
Right. We will assure that there is an nth root of unity in my finite field of Q. That's an assumption of Q. And so we will artificially put this in our defining ring of the scheme.
So is this the way that Hitchin appears in the Gauss work? Or?
No, it's a simpler way. So n Gauss works with the moduli space of Higgs bundles, with the other one, not the character variety. And he studies the same sort of questions, but then it's much harder because you don't have such nice defining equations. So he really has to use much deeper techniques to be able to understand the number of points on the Hitchin moduli space. But the character variety you will see somehow, because it's defined by one equation, and then this equation is very special type, you can have a character formula for this, and which really is due to Frobenius, but there is in fact a physics approach to this. This really is given to you by the topological quantum field theory of representations of the variety into a finite group, this finite Chern-Simons theory with a finite gauge group. So this is now your gauge group GNFQ. And then the resulting formula here is really what you get from topological quantum field theory. So what you get is a character formula for all irreducible characters of your finite groups, which in our case turns out to be GNFQ. What you need to know about the character table is the dimension of the characters and then the values of the characters on these roots of unities in your finite field times the identity element. So the nice thing about the character table GNFQ that we know this explicitly. So now we are getting closer to what Shamshan was talking about. I mean, the really difficult story, of course, is GNNTUP is a difficult representation theory, but GNFQ we understand since 1955. We have a complete description of the character table of GNFQ, and then which is given completely combinatorially, and then we managed to evaluate these sums for every n. So that was not trivial, but then we have, and then I show you the formula in a refined form. And then after you do the calculation, you will find the result is a polynomial in Q, And so by the previous theorem, you can deduce that it's not just that you counted the number of sorptions of this equation of finite field. What you did, you obtained the E polynomial of the variety.
So it's checked by inspection, actually, right? Not because of some conceptual reasons.
Good question. My colleague tells me, who knows more about the character theory, that we might expect this for every finite group of Lie type, that this is a polynomial. But indeed, in our case, it was by... You look at the character table, that already looks very good. It has polynomials and some roots of unities. And somehow, everything... and then you get rid of the roots of unities in these calculations, and the result is a polynomial.
Aren't the summands here rational functions?
Yes. Well, in the... Yes, that's right.
When you
exactly. Exactly. I think that's fair to say.
Second set is almost from the Verlinde formula.
Oh, this is like the Verlinde formula. So, in fact, if you replaced the GLFQ by a compact group, this would be the Verlinde formula. This is the same sort of topological quantum
field. There is some twist by high. You can't recognize it, right?
And, in fact, there is an analog. I mean, the way how it enters the Hitchin moduli space is the analog with GLNQP, some sort of analog. So this formula is the same sort of character formula. But again, because the combinatorics is known, we could explicitly evaluate these formulas, and then we found them to be polynomials.
Well, in the other story, the funny thing was that for some reason, we have to take P equal 1. So it's like a field of one element.
Okay. But that was one limit, no?
The limit.
Yeah, yeah.
To connect to the other one, we have to take P formally substitute as a 1.
Right.
Which I don't understand why.
Right. Well, for us, if you set Q equals 1, it gives you the Euler characteristic of the variety. I don't know what that means, of course. GLNF1 is another interesting group, which is probably SN, actually. But.
So Les says it's most important question to study field of
one. I know. Okay, so that's also should be a root to number theory, right? The idea is that is the algebraic geometry over the integers somehow. Okay. So so let me show you that one of the first immediate outcomes of this calculation was a really surprise to us, because what you find is that this calculation does not depend on which primitive nth root of unity you have here. As long as D and N are co-prime, it doesn't matter which D you have. And that's really surprising. If you think about the moduli space of Higgs bundles, there is no a priori reason that its cohomology would be independent of D. If you had seen the work of Atiyah Bhatt and others, and Harden and Rassilon, who calculated the cohomology, the Betti numbers of the moduli space of stable bundles, which is somehow the killer version of these spaces, those seriously depend on the degree. The surprising thing was, for us first, that this calculation does not depend on the choice of D. You have a universal polynomial independent of D.
Is there some other invariant that does distinguish those spaces?
Distinguishes what? We don't know the varieties are, for example, we don't know are they algebraically the same.
But they might be really the same.
Maybe we don't even know if they are homomorphic. You will see in a moment, because what we know is that, in fact, the varieties, okay, this is some mathematics, but the varieties are Galois conjugate over the complex numbers. There is an automorphism of the complex numbers which sends one root of unity to the other, and so the varieties are Galois conjugate. And then you can define this algebraically completely, the cohomology by algebraic Durham cohomology and the weight filtration, everything you can algebraically define, and this automorphism, Galois conjugation, will give you an isomorphism between the cohomology groups for different D's. And that's, I mean, this is still an obvious observation, but that's very surprising. If you had looked at them, now you go to the moduli space of Higgs bundles, this is something you wouldn't expect. But this is the theorem that the cohomologies are independent of D. That's maybe the first non-trivial outcome of looking at the character varieties. Okay, so...
You can change D to D prime. If you apply Frobenius, you can change D to D prime. So maybe it's not very much... expected that it doesn't depend on D, actually, right?
No, it's again a Galois conjugation you have to do.
Yeah.
It's not the Frobenius, you have to send one and to primitive root of unity to the other by some automorphism of FQ. That's why this...
Part of the arithmetic is not surprising, the application, geometric application.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
And the geometric application is not on this story, but in the moduli space of Higgs bundles. It's really surprising that this is independent of D. Okay, so then that was the first outcome, and then the second one was, first of all, we managed to get a nice generating function of this. So we took a generating function of these E polynomials, and we packaged them together in a complicated way. We had to have these exponentials, and then we get something simple. But what you see here is a refinement. So what we do, we are interested in, of course, the Poincaré polynomial, but we cannot get there. We have the E polynomial, which is a non-trivial specialization of the mixed-Hodge polynomial. So what we were trying to do, we were trying to see if our calculations can be at least formally refined, deformed into a possible formula for the mixed-Hodge polynomial of the character variety. And here it is now, the conjecture. I mean, it's based on a lot of calculations. In NS2, for example, we could calculate the mixed-Hodge polynomial explicitly, and then we found this formula is correct. So there's a lot of evidence now for this conjecture. So now this is a refined version of the calculation we have. This is only a conjecture. It should, in principle, encode all the mixed-Hodge polynomial, the two variable polynomials of all these character varieties. Okay, that's a little bit combinatorially tricky, although it's only one line. So what we have here, this thing actually depends on n now. So n is not fixed anymore. We will be summing over n. For every n, I take the character variety which is no longer dependent on d. So d is any of the d's which are co-prime to n.
So n is the GLN.
n is the GLN. So, and there should be another index here. This is the GLN character variety. And so for every n, you take the mixed-Hodge polynomial, you do some change of variables, because somehow these variables z and w are nicer than the qt we had before. And then you put them together for every n, and then you also not just put them together, you also have to raise, this is a platistic change. We raise everything to the kth power and add this together, and we have one more variable t to remember this platistic change, and then the n as well. Anyway, this is somehow what came out of the calculations.
And
that's the dimension of the nth variety. So that's, I mean, that's because we do this. This is just the change of variables. But the point is that what you have here, all the mixed-Hodge polynomials of the character variety is complicated, they combine together, and then what it says, the conjecture, that somehow they unravel in a very nice fashion with the sum over all partitions of n, for every n. Here is the size of the partition, and then what you evaluate is for each, you write down the partition, you have this Young tableau, and every field in the Young tableau has an arm length and a leg length, and then that's what we got. This was really by inspection after a lot of trial and errors trying to, again, the strategy should be clear. We have this character formula, and somehow irreducible characters of G and FQ are related to the irreducible characters of SN or the Hecke algebra. They are labeled by partitions. So the partitions here, I mean, retrospectively are related to the representation theory of G and FQ. And for each lambda, this is what it unravels to. So this is a highly non-trivial formula. We cannot, for example, prove that what it gives is a polynomial in two variables, or not even positive.
Is that H from this?
Yes, there is a way to invert this. And then we cannot prove that's a polynomial. We cannot prove it has positive coefficients. Although in any time you calculate by Maple up to any seven or something, every genus, we always get this is a polynomial. So it's a highly non-trivial fact that these are things that are already polynomials. So
the formula probably doesn't have a fifth theory explanation like the previous formula, because you are summing over Dirac. You are summing over Dirac, right?
Yes,
your
yes.
Your bundle was around Ken.
Yes. But I mean this formula.
You might have a topological string.
Topological string?
Yeah, that's at the end that will be the case. I mean at the end you will have some. But for us, this was the conjecture. Let me show you two examples. When genus equals zero, for example, it's already non-trivial. This numerator disappears, and then these things will be empty. The character variety for genus zero is empty, except when n equals one, we formally call that a point. So this is a very simple formula, and then amazingly, we found this formula in the work of Garcia and Hyman, and it has to do with the Cauchy formula for MacDonald polynomials, some specialization to this. In the beginning, it was really surprising. Anyway, that formula, when genus equals zero, then is a true theorem. But the amazing thing is that when genus equals one, again, we know that these things are torized, so let's see what the formula gives when genus equals one. When genus equals 1, we know that for every g, it's just the torus. So I know, of course, what the mixed Dutch polynomial of the torus is because of, say, these calculations. And then in the left-hand side, of course, what I have is just g equals 1 situation here. You have this extra numerator, which was missing from Garcia and Hyman's work. And then you have here, this is basically the mixed Dutch polynomial of the torus here. And this formula is now purely combinatorial. There is no geometrical input, and then we don't know a combinatorial proof. I mean, many specializations we managed to prove, and then at the end I will report of another geometrical proof, but after we input the physics ideas, we will have that's already summed up here, right? For every n, you see t to the k over 1 minus t to the k. That's summed up here.
Did you say that somehow this h kind of looks like McDonald's?
So somehow, that's right. So what we managed to, I will mention at the end, but I can do it now. If you put in punctures to the character varieties, we have a similar conjectures, and then the mixed Dutch polynomials combined together will be given by a generating function of some MacDonald polynomials. MacDonald polynomials now, I mean originally it was a surprise, but the main conjecture we have is shows that MacDonald polynomials govern conjecturally the mixed Dutch polynomials of these character varieties. Yes, for example. And then, I mean, the other things too. But again, this is just a conjecture. We don't have a conceptual reason for now to believe this is true, but I mean, these are very robust ones in the sense that they're non-trivial formulas and every computation works out. And then any time then you can, so NS4 calculation, for example, for the moduli space of Higgs bundles was checked against our conjectures. So any time someone can calculate Poincaré polynomials, they come to this, they calculate this mixed Dutch polynomial and they equate Q equals 1.
There's a clear physics interpretation of this?
Yes, that will be the second part of the talk. The same formula somehow is a refined Gopakumar-Wafa conjecture for the, some local curve in some string theory. But this will then, things will mean completely different things, so that's why it's so exciting to me. Okay, so let me then go on and first mathematically show how you can relate everything back to the moduli space of Higgs bundles. As I already said, we already have this surprising result that things are independent of D. But what you can ask, can we see the same filtration? Basically, the interesting stuff arises because we looked at these arrows, because we looked at these this extra structure on the cohomology. And you can ask, is there a similar structure on the cohomology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which would give you the weight filtration on the character variety? What you have to know is that the Higgs bundles, again, have a pure mixed Dutch structure. So this is just the same as WK there. So it cannot be the weight filtration. There must be some other filtration on the cohomology. So let me show you what is this other filtration. And then the way how we arrived there was this an extra symmetry which we noticed already very early on, if you remember. So this was our character formula. And then whenever you do a calculation, what you get, the E polynomial of this result is going to be palindromic. So if you do, for example, our favorite example, then its E polynomial is Q minus 1 square. It's Q square minus 2Q plus 1. And of course, this is palindromic. It reads the same way backwards than forward. But this seems to be happening, no, it happens every time. And this is very surprising. Why would an affine variety have a palindromic E polynomial? That's a, it's a very surprising.
It's affine. It's affine. It's Poincaré duality, wouldn't it?
No, there is no Poincaré duality on an affine. This is non-compact.
That's why it's surprising.
Yes, that's why it's surprising.
I mean, it looks like Poincaré duality.
But it looks like Poincaré, but it's a mixed one because somehow it, you will see in a moment, it will be a Harlefshed sort of result. And that it messes with the weights. So it's not a direct Poincaré duality, it will remember the weights, which are non-trivial. And then the nice thing that this, so then you can prove that the calculation is actually a palindromic polynomial. So it reads the same way backwards than forward. It's an extra functional equation it satisfies, which should be Poincaré duality if the variety had one, but it doesn't have one. And then, in fact, there is a representation theory reason for that. You can see this palindromicity in the character theory of G and FQ. So let me not say.
Doesn't that suggest that there's another cohomology theory which is Poincaré dual?
Yeah, that's what, I mean, basically that's what we will get to in a moment. The point is that this Poincaré duality is really sees the weight filtration, because here is the you can refine this observation to isomorphism in the cohomology groups. So various weighted pieces of the mixed Hodge polynomial or the mixed Hodge structure then should be isomorphic. I mean, that's a refined version of this polynomicity, and in fact there is a connecting homomorphism between them, which would be a sort of Hardleff-Schatz theorem. There is a unique class in degree 2, which would, in dimension 2...
I don't understand what you've written. Is that the associated graded?
It's the associated graded of the weight filtration on the character variety, and then you take these graded pieces, and then this symmetry, which is actually a less refined one, is present as an agreement of these Hodge numbers, these dimensions of these weighted pieces, but not just they are the same, so they come in pairs, but there is a connecting homomorphism between the underlying vector spaces, which is like a Hardleff-Schatz homomorphism. It's a degree 2 class raised to the power L. But what's weird about this, why we call this curious Hardleff-Schatz, is that the class is not a pure class. It's not of a class of weight 2, what you have in a Hardleff-Schatz theorems. It's not an ample class, but it is. But it has weight 4. So it's like the class in C star square, right? We have a weight 1 class, weight 2 class in C star, so in C star square we have a weight 4 class. That's the class we are talking about. It's a curious class. It's weird to we didn't understand why this might hold, but we managed to prove the theorem Venenis 2. So this was the theorem Venenis 2. And then indeed, one of the guiding principles for the previous conjecture was that that also must satisfy this symmetry. And in fact, that symmetry is just the symmetry between Z and W. So that if you remember, everything was symmetric in Z and W, and that fact is really saying that if those things are polynomials, then they are symmetry with respect to this curious Hardleff-Schatz theorem. And then now comes the explanation, well, at least the conjectural explanation, because there was a known version of Poincaré duality or relative Poincaré duality in the literature, but that used a different filtration in a really different setup. And so the setup is really different. It's about now a proper map between complex algebraic varieties. And this is going to be the Hitchin map, so in our story. So we will be changing to the other variety which we started with, which shares the same cohomology, and on that cohomology we will see another filtration defined completely different ways, but which will have this symmetry, this Hardleff-Schatz theorem built into this. And so the general story is that for any proper map between a complex algebraic varieties, if you like, for any of your algebraically completely integrable systems which are proper, like the Hitchin map, you have an extra filtration on the cohomology of the total space. It really depends on the filtration, so it's no longer independent of the filtration. So you can define this filtration just like the weight filtration. It looks like just like the weight filtration, but the definition is really different. And the way how they define this is they looked at the decomposition theorem for the push forward of the constant sheaf, and then those perverse sheaves are not unique, but somehow the way how they decompose it will give you a unique filtration on the total space. It's a highly non-trivial mathematics. It's very algebraic. Now we have complex algebraic proof of this due to Decataldo and Migliorini. But here I show you a much simpler way to think about this perverse filtration. I mean, this is really the conceptual way to think about it. But in our case, when the total space will be smooth and the bases and affine, then Decataldo and Migliorini have a very nice alternative way to think about this perverse filtration. And it will in particular show you that the perverse filtration encodes information on the topology of the fibration, and in fact the topology of the singular fibers will somehow be the important aspect.
For any algebraic integrable.
If it's a proper map, and then yes, then there would be this extra filtration on the cohomology, which you will see satisfies the Hardleff-Schatz theorem, so there will be an extra symmetry.
There must be some parity restrictions as always, right, because of not for arbitrary, for say, x y. It's always a spiral shifting to assume that something is even, right?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's for this general case, it could be any. There is no even. I mean, for us, it will be an even dimensional manifold, but that's not necessary.
For complex, not complex. pinching case, it will be the x and y will be what we call I and j complex factors.
No. X will be the moduli space of Higgs bundles, and y will be the Hitching base. This will be the Hitching map.
This is
the integrable system. So in the case of
Y
is the base of the Hitching map, which is an affine variety in the case of the Hitching map. So we will be able to apply this theorem, which is a much down-to-earth way to think about the perverse filtration. So what we do in this is that we take a flag in the image variety. So for the Hitching base, it will be something like a vector space or an affine space. And then what we will take a generic hypersurface in it. Inside that hypersurface, we'll take a generic hypersurface in that, etc. So we have this tower of generic subspaces, one for each dimension. And genericity somehow is not easy to define, but the idea is that it should somehow intersect all discriminant loci of the Hitching maps or your map F. So you will have all kinds of degenerations of the fibers. The generic fibers for us will be tori, but you will get more and more singular fibers. You will have all kinds of degeneration loci. You will want to be transversal to each of them. That's somehow the genericity condition. And then once you have that, for any such testing subvarieties, we can describe the perverse filtration explicitly as follows.
So why sub I? That doesn't refer to the dimension.
I refers to the dimension.
It does refer to the dimension.
Yes.
So what does it mean for Y0?
Y0 is a generic point. It's a generic point in the base of the Hitching map. So that is
it just says that it's not in the discriminant locus.
In that case, the transversality just says, in any time it has to be transversal to anything which is of opposite dimension. So that will be important. I will make a comment in the case when it's a generic point, because what we are doing here, in order to define or think about the perverse filtration, what we do that we test the cohomology groups, classes in the total space by restricting the class over that test variety. So if you take which classes go to zero over the ice subvariety, and then the kernel of this will be one particular bit of the perverse filtration. So one example, the nicest example, is to think about the generic fiber of your map, generic fiber of the Hitching map in our case. We'll see which classes in the total space of the Hitching map go to zero when we go to the generic fiber of the Hitching map. And then those classes in every degree will give you certain bits of the perverse filtration. So it's very down to earth. There is no mention of perverse sheaves, but of course what's non-trivial here is that the resulting filtration is independent of the testing subvarieties you chose. And so that's a non-trivial theorem, but it's very nice to and easy to think about it. And then the original definition really was motivated, in fact, these perverse sheaf studies were motivating by finding the analog of Hartle-Lefschetz theorems in the relative setting, really. And in fact, because of that, we do have a theorem now that this perverse filtration on the total space of any proper map satisfies this duality, which is very similar to what we had before, except the difference is that this is now a theorem, and that the same way as before, but now replacing the weight filtration with the perverse filtration, I have a natural isomorphism between graded pieces of the perverse filtration connected by wedging with the Keeler form or the ample, relatively ample class in our case. So now alpha is your nice ample class. It's really 1-1. It's your relative setup for the Hartle-Lefschetz theorem. And so this is a situation in mathematics when this previous sort of symmetry, which just somehow can only conjecture, is present. And so it was a natural thing to conjecture that maybe the weight filtration might be related to the perverse filtration of a proper map. And then the proper map, of course, is what we in this conference like, is the Hitching map.
Wait, the map has to be proper or projective?
Maybe projective, but
you have to talk about a relative ample class.
Well, you have a relative ample class, so yeah, it must be projective then. Yes. So I don't know about the decomposition theorem. Do you need the projectivity? Then you probably, let's know. In our case, it's you always have a Keeler form on the Hitching moduli space, so you always have a relative ample class. So the Orr proper map is going to be the Hitchin map, which is our favorite completely integrable Hamiltonian system. In Orr setup and DNNR coprime, this is a smooth variety of moduli space of Higgs bundles, and we take the characteristic polynomial of the Higgs field, and we will end up in this vector space, this affine space of half of the dimension of the total space. And then, of course, it has a nice algebraic symplectic structure, and this map is famously an integrable Hamiltonian system, completely integrable Hamiltonian system. And then what's important for us, it's a proper map. So we have this proper map, and then the generic fibers will be tori, will be some Jacobians of some spectral curves, and you have singular fibers, more and more singular. And then what you have before, because of the results of Decotard and Migliorini, you have this nice perverse filtration of the cohomology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And then this really, this symmetry was the motivation to conjecture that in fact the perverse filtration on the cohomology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which is another sort of refinement of the original problem of finding, say, the Betti numbers. Now, not just the Betti numbers, try to find the perverse Betti numbers on the moduli space of Higgs bundles is the same as the weight filtration on the character variety. And then of course, the two cohomologies are naturally identified by non-Abelian Hodge theorem, and then you have two filtrations, and they have the same symmetry, and so maybe the reason for this conjecture of the Curie-Sarlacci theorem is the corresponding result for the perverse filtration, because the two filtrations agree. So this is a conjecture, and this is now a very nice bridge between connecting the arithmetic of the character variety, which this weight filtration sees, with the topology of the Hitchin map on the Higgs moduli spaces. In particular, because we have this conjecture about the mixed-Hodge polynomial of character varieties, we will have a conjecture up to this conjecture on the dimensions of the graded pieces of the perverse filtration of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, and in fact that conjecture is the one that physicists can interpret in a different way. So let me, before going on and start the physics part of the talk, which will be interesting in this conference, because you will understand the things which I will talk about more than I do, but anyway, let me say that when n equals 2 is a theorem, so that's really what's behind this after, let's say, very brute force calculation, knowing the complete cohomology ring of the moduli space of Higgs bundles helped us to prove that p equals w when n equals 2. It's really non-trivial. The problem with this calculation, although you can calculate the weight filtration explicitly, but the perverse filtration is very hard to get your hands on. If you just think about this simple definition, what you have to know the cohomology of very singular fibers of the Hitchin map. And for any stool, after some time, we managed to get enough information to be able to deduce this result. But for higher n, we don't have a clue. I mean, and then also what's interesting is that this study of the cohomology of the singular fibers of the Hitchin map, and in fact this perverse filtration, is really the strategy of Engel's proof fundamental lemma. He studies the perverse filtration of the cohomology of the fiber of the Hitchin map, and then relates it to the arithmetic of the Hitchin fiber, and then in turn that turns out to be related to the fundamental lemma in the Legrand's program. Okay, I just have run out of time before my second part of my talk would happen. So then...
Can I ask a question about this? Yeah. Because someone told me that in Bro's work it's important that he computes some kind of cohomologies and uses the periods, some kind of period maps, integrates over fibers. Any comment?
Period. So he counts the number of points on the Hitchin fiber over a finite field.
Something we like in what we do appears like.
I'm sure we would love it if we could understand it. It would be great. It's very technical, unfortunately. But the formulas at the end will be like trace formulas and orbital integral.
Some periods. I want. Okay. But he cannot explain.
I don't know. Okay, so the second part of the talk will be, because, I mean, in our paper we really hesitated, I mean, I didn't hesitate, but my collaborators hesitated how much we should claim here as a conjecture. I thought it must be true every time. It's such a fantastic conjecture. We have a lot of symmetry structure on the weight filtration side, which is known on this side. But the nice thing now is that for every n, there is a reinterpretation of the conjecture with Fernando Rodriguez Villegas, which amazingly, for me, conjecturally give you some in physics conjecture of what the graded pieces of the perverse filtration of the moduli space of Higgs bundle should be. And the really exciting thing for me, how can physicists think about the perverse filtration? The answer to this will be in a moment, we will see, is that of course the perverse filtration is so far hard to understand in the physics, but what the relative Hard-Lefschetz gives you, if you have seen any time Hard-Lefschetz theorems, you know that always gives you an action of the Lie algebra SL2. If you have something like a Hard-Lefschetz theorem, for example, on the cohomology of any smooth projective variety, you have an action of the Lie algebra SL2. And that symmetry, that SL2 action, somehow very naturally arises in some physics. So that's then the second part. And what we will see is that the refined Gopakumar Vafa conjecture.
Before moving to the next transfer, just sorry for this 1 minute. So the key lemma in the Ngo approach is that there is an action of open Jacobian on its compactification.
That's right.
Can you see it here in this approach? The Hitchin fibers are just compactified open Jacobians, right? Some special canonical compactification, which is really very close to what you're discussing here, right? So the initial point is just to count the number of distributions, exactly your W's. Some formulas just coincide with their formulas, your formulas with their formulas. They count the number of invariant distributions, right? But on that hand, then there is a globalization comes, compactifications of Jacobians, right? And the action of Jacobian on the homology of compactified Jacobians. Can you see it somehow here with around your conjectures?
So we talk about GLN, and in that case, GLN case, the symmetry group what NGO is connected. So, and then when he will go to the group of components of that Jacobian, that will be always trivial for GLN. So it's trivial for GLN.
Okay, for GLN it is much.
The thing is, of course, for SLN I like to study too, but for SLN you don't have the physics.
The point when you like N equals 2 or at least GLN, right?
So for GLN it's...
it is sort of trivial for GLN.
For GLN, but I mean NGO's work is... I mean the fundamental lemma is trivial for GLN somehow. But for SL2 or SLN, and then you can, I mean, we did it for SL2 too, for example, and then we were doing very similar things of NGO's fundamental lemma. Then you have to think about this group of components of the PCAR of that thing, and that will be non-trivial for SL2 already. But for a GLN, we don't see that here, because GLN, so it's...
Okay, so
let me then now give you an interpretation of the Orr conjecture with Fernando on the mixed Hodge polynomials coming from physics as a refined Gopakumar-Vafa conjecture for local curves. I try to explain what I understand out of this and then try to make some mathematical comments on this. So this is a work of Diaconescu and his postdoc and student and Rutgers. So the situation that the string theory you have to do is this Calabi-Yau threefold, which is a local curve, is a rank 2 vector bundle, the total space of rank 2 vector bundle on the curve, the trivial bundle plus the canonical bundle are chosen so that the total space will be Calabi-Yau. So that's what we call this Calabi-Yau threefold, a local curve. And so mathematically things will not be defined, so I mean it's even hard to call what we will see a conjecture, because possibly neither side will be defined a priori, but then we will have some ways to conjecturally calculate the things which are not defined. But anyway, so what the hope is that one can define these mathematically, these quantum or motivic boundary under Thomas invariants on this Calabi-Yau threefold, which you can put together into a generating function, which in the physics would be your refined partition function of, I don't know, some string theory on this Calabi-Yau threefold. But mathematically, what we would like to see is a definition of this quantum Pandori-Pandor Thomas invariant. So what you have to...
D0, D2, D6 bound states wrapping like Calabi-Yau.
Thank you. But anyway, so the mathematical definition is lacking of this. I mean, the moduli spaces are defined. So these are Pandéri-Pan, the Thomas moduli spaces of stable pairs of a sheaf of dimension one support of homology class beta in H2, and E is the Euler characteristic of the sheaf. Together, here in this case, we probably won't have the section. Anyway, so it's some Pandéri-Pan de Thomas moduli space. It's highly singular. And then Pandéri-Pan de Thomas manages to define a virtual Euler characteristic of this variety. And that would give you the usual Pandéri-Pan de Thomas invariance. But for this refined Bupa-Kumar-Wafa conjecture, we need, instead of Euler characteristic, we need some sort of quantum version of that, some motivic version of that. So sometimes it's called motivic Pandéri-Pan de Thomas or Donaldson-Thomas invariance, and that should be some sort of virtual E polynomial of the variety. And then you take this big generating function, and that should be the refined string theory partition function or whatever we heard.
Let me see if there's actually one thing I'm not sure about, which is what physicists call the decent ring number. So the E, you have a sum over n and z.
Must be n must be e.
N is e.
Must be e.
N is e. Okay, so that's what physicists call d zero grain number. Beta is the d two grain number. But is the sheaf? Is there a sheaf of higher rank wrapping the whole? I'm trying to understand if you have d six grain number one or higher than.
I think
one.
It's one.
You think it's just one?
I think so.
Yeah, so that's what I would think. So the way
okay, so there's a rank one sheaf.
There's rank one sheaf on that.
On this non-compact Kolobi.
Yes, but which has a one-dimensional support. There is a curve of support of the sheaf, and that has a rank one sheaf
so
only.
Then I think in the physics, the D6 prime number is one. That's how I'm trying.
The question is it a torsion sheaf or not? I mean, is it just supported?
It's supported on a one-dimensional curve. It's on a curve.
Then definitely the D6 prime number is one. Now I understand.
No, zero. It's supported only on the curve.
No. because they're doing Donaldson Thomas invariance, it's not. If you were counting just D2, D0 bound space, you'd just be counting local Kolmogorov invariance. This is not what Pandéri-Pan and Thomas are counting. They're counting bound states of a single D6 brain, a non-compact D6 brain, which is bound to D2 and D0 brains. And he's got this big D6 brain wrapping the Kolobi Yau, and he's summing over the D2 and D0s.
Why not over
D4
though?
I think it's a good question, but you see, by a Bethiel shift, you can always put the D4 brain number to zero because the D6 brain number is one.
Okay, I am just copying it from a talk by Diaconescu, so. And this again, mathematically, this is not defined. So this is some refined analog. Okay, so the other side, again, is even more mysterious, but we will be able to define this. These refined BPS invariants, again, which is somehow comes from some M theory physics, which you will understand, and I don't. So some these refined BPS invariants appear here, and then you combine them in this very complicated generating function, and that's this the refined Gopuka-Marwafa generating function. And then in a moment I tell you how the Diaconescu and then they define these numbers using the perverse filtration on the.
What is n beta? Is it Donaldson Thomas? What is n?
This is this refined BPS invariant of this local curve, which I actually will define precisely mathematically. So this thing actually will be defined. But the thing about this that you have to believe is that somehow this is the same as the refined BPS invariants in that M theory.
Can be purely mathematically well defined.
In this local curve case. And that's already very nice. I mean, and
Thomas says that they are not actually well
no, defined. In the general case, the mathematicians take this generating function and then this conjecture, which is the refined BPS conjecture, and they define these numbers via this conjecture. That's what mathematicians do. But this time, for the local curve case, and this is one of the major observations of Diaconescu and others, you can actually define these numbers as appearing in the graded pieces of the perverse filtration on the cohomology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And you will see, I think it's the next slide, that I explain how to define this mathematically, precisely, geometrically, a priori without anything on the left-hand side. Again, left-hand side is not defined, so it's not mathematically really not clear what it is. But let me tell you then how these numbers can be understood from the perverse filtration of moduli space of Higgs bundles. And again, you can help me explain it from the physics. So as far as I try to understand, the way how these numbers heuristically arose is that you take some space of BPS states, I believe, or it should be somehow heuristically the cohomology of some space of D brains on your Calabi-Yau threefold, and then you would have to consider some cohomology of this. And then on this cohomology, because of the physics, which is apparently some duality between M theory and type 2A theory, somehow you have you will have this symmetry group acting. This SO4, which decomposes into two copies of SL2, it will have to act on the space of BPS states, which in this geometrical approach, in fact, it was already, I think in the original work of Gupta Kumar Vaffa, they already had this sort of geometrical interpretation. The difficulty in mathematics is that the cohomology of these spaces, or even the spaces, are highly singular and very difficult to understand what the right cohomology theory of them. But you see in the local curve case, we have a very good substitute for this space of D brains, which will be non-singular. But the point is that these things, just nothing else but the ones which correspond to the irreducible representations of these two SL2s. So what you do, you have the action of SL2 times SL2 on this cohomology group, and then you take the irreducible bits, and then these numbers will remember the irreducible, the multiplicity of the irreducible representations of this group. So that's the heuristic, and we will see how you can do this in the case of a local curve. So here, what they argue is that the space of D brains, so if you have a G brain, which is some sort of sheaf, something like what we had before, there is a Bovil-Narasimhan-Ramanand theorem, this is due to them, which identifies those D brains on the local Calabi-Yau threefold with the Higgs bundle on the base. So the moduli space of these D brains under these connections, so beta will be n times the homology class.
What's the geometric engineering or something?
That will come at the end, yeah, geometric engineering. But I mean, this point is just explaining why you can think of these numbers, how these numbers arise in the cohomology of the moduli space of Higgs bundles. So what they say is that for the local curve, the moduli space of D brains should be the moduli space of Higgs bundles. And then we will remember that we have this proper map, and the proper map defines a perverse filtration, and then the perverse filtration gives us a relative Harlevsches theorem, and the relative Harlevsches theorem gives us an SL2 action on the cohomology. In fact, the idea, original idea, was they already had this idea, Gopu, Kamer and Vaffa, that there should be a relative Harlevsches theorem giving you one of the SL2s. For them, everything was a projective variety, and there would be a global Harlevsches, and that would give you the other SL2. But
which SL2 are we talking about? The SL2 that comes from the perverse filtration?
So we will see, I think I write it here, that it will be, I think, the L1. If that helps you. So the left SL2L will be the relative Harlevsches. Apparently, in the original work, they already expected this. So you would have, they said, the relative Harlevsches, and you would have a global Harlevsches. In that case, in their case, everything would be projective. You would have a global Harlevsches theorem. In this local case, we will not have a global Harlevsches because we don't have a projective variety, but we have a relative Harlevsches. And that will give us the left SL2 action on the graded pieces of the perverse filtration, graded of the perverse filtration. So that's very good. So we can recover one of these SL2s, and then we will not be able to recover the other because we don't have a global Harlevsches, but they managed to find some substitute for that. Instead of an SL2 action, they can construct a GL1 action using the primitive decomposition of this cohomology of the Higgs moduli space using the perverse cohomology. This is what appears in our work with Decatada and Migliorini. Anyway, there is an extra way, and somehow technically they can talk about at least the GL one on the other side, and somehow that will give us enough information to recover the full scope of these refined BPS invariants. And so here is the definition. I just take what they say should be this BPS invariant should be the dimension of this bit of the primitive decomposition of the moduli space of Higgs-Mundus. And the primitive decomposition is, of course, up to the perverse filtration. Okay, so here is a nice mathematical definition. The other thing which we have to know about these numbers, that there is a correspondence between these numbers and the dimensions of the graded pieces of the perverse filtration, so they remember as much information as our perverse Hodge polynomials, which we are interested in.
I'm trying to remember the identification of M beta E with the Higgs
yes.
modulus. What's the rank of the group for the Higgs bundle?
N. And if the beta, the cycle had N times the. So you have a spectral curve thing.
Yeah, okay.
It's an N cover over the Higgs bundle.
Right. So that's just having an N times wrapped
D2
ring on a curve.
Yes.
I thought that for the local Kalabiyev, there was some other work by Mavli and Okunkov and so on, where they extracted.
But they did an unrefined version. No, they only had the unrefined version. That's right.
So they did not extract the Gopakumar Wolfram variant?
Not these refined ones. So then you have some Euler characteristic sort of expression.
Nikita, I mentioned it before. And then there was some work by Thomas where.
Yeah, they did this, but this is not this refined. Because through that conjecture, right, they could calculate the left-hand side, and then that gives them these numbers. But these numbers are refined ones, so there is basically some Euler characteristic.
So there was the other Maulik and Nikita, and other work was not refined?
Neither of them was refined. I mean, as I said, it's not defined. The refined invariants are not defined. And these ones correspond to the refined invariants. So there is some summation, the ones, the little n's that they can extract. The little n's, which is some linear combination of these big n's.
Oh, this is that work of Andrei.
Yes, and they can define those numbers. And then via this work, we should have a connection between the cohomology of the Higgs moduli space. So anyway, so this explains at least what's the definition. So at any rate, what's important is that the Gopu-Kamar-Wafa generating function basically will have the same information as the generating function for the graded pieces of the perverse filtration of the moduli space of Higgs bundles, which up to our conjecture of P equals W is the same as the information on the mixed Hodge polynomial of the character variety. So let me tell you how to calculate the left-hand side, which was unfortunately not defined. What should the refined Pandari-Pandet-Thomas invariants correspond to? And then there is another physics approach to conjecture what these numbers should be, and that's now done by this geometric engineering. So again, I am just quoting what they say. They say that by geometric engineering, we expect that these refined Pandari-Pandet-Thomas invariants should be described by a partition function in a completely different gauge theory.
But geometric engineering, Bezorin, this is doing connects the gauge theory to the
exactly.
Kalabiyev.
Yeah, but yeah, that's right. And so there is a Kalabiyev, and then here is a gauge theory. And they tell us what's the gauge theory we should take. And then they tell us what the partition function of the gauge theory is. So for you, you probably don't, but I need to know what's the partition function. And so what's the gauge theory? So mathematically, very surprising that the gauge theory will be on R4. So although we have a non-trivial curve of genus G, and for every genus, then we will always be on R4. And then it will be a U1 gauge theory. So the space of U1 instantons will be the Hilbert scheme of endpoints on C2. And then somehow this partition function of the gauge theory will be some equivariant integral of some equivariant index of some bundle on that Hilbert scheme of endpoints. And here is this partition function. This is mathematically now well defined, in fact, completely, explicitly, combinatorially obtainable. You take this generating function of this equivariant Hirzebruch Y genus of a certain element in the equivariant K theory on the Hilbert scheme of endpoints on C2. What you have to take is g times the copy of the cotangent bundle. That's some field content in the theory. So here is where g enters. It's mathematically, it's very mysterious that g enters in the thing which you have to.
The genus from the previous theory, right?
This is the genus of the curve.
And there is no curve here.
No curve, just
c2. Four-dimensional version.
Okay.
The Hilbert scheme of points is the moduli space of whatever.
Yes.
Shapes.
Yeah. You want. Yeah.
So you are counting.
That's right.
I mean, the physics that we had, you know, was a brain graph on the curve.
That's a good point. Yes.
That's exactly the dimension of H0 of the. And. But we did it for complex. CP2, whatever.
So the point is that everything is torus invariant. We have a torus action on X. That's the way you can define this mathematically, at least. So you have this torus action on the on C2, and that acts on the Hilbert scheme. And mathematically, I can define this, say, by localizing to the fixed points. You have isolated fixed points labeled by partitions of K, and to each of them you will get some very simple expression of what this equivariant index will restrict.
Five-dimensional
variant
part instead of partition.
Okay.
That's how
Emmanuel
and all are.
That's what they
call it. No, I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'm sure there is
five-dimensional on the omega background partition.
Well,
okay.
I'm not sure they're using omega
backgrounds,
but I think
otherwise they need
torus section. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, he just says he's doing it.
It's equivariantly with the two-dimensional torus.
Yep.
And so, you have to get somewhere here, McDonald's, according
yes,
to
McDonald's. Yes, that's right.
Then
if you...
Zero, yes.
Right. And, okay, so let me... my point is that mathematically now this is well-defined. For every partition, I know what's the local contribution to the Hirzebruch-Weyl genus of this sheaf is, and then I can actually calculate this. So we can define combinatorially this partition function in the gauge theory. And amazingly, this will be exactly the same thing as our left-hand side in our conjecture. So this is the final picture of their work, is that the gauge theory partition function, when you localize to the fixed points, will turn out to be exactly the same as we had before. But now things mean completely different things. Now these lambdas, these partitions of every k, in our case, you remember, it had to do with the representation theory of GLN. Now FQ, now it has to do with fixed points on the Hilbert scheme of k points on C2. And then this term, which somehow had to do with the characters of GLNFQ in the previous story, now it has to do with this this localized index of, or it's the Hilbert-Weyl genus of this bundle at that fixed point. And then when you calculate this, you have this equivariant normal class of the equivariant Euler class of the normal bundle. And that's what you see here, and this is this contribution coming from this gene.
It would be nice to remove this middle part, this ref of PT, because that's again defined substance.
This is not defined,
right?
Yeah,
right, yeah.
But, okay, that's right. The point is that now if you take this refined Gopuka-Marwaffa conjecture, and then, okay, you can forget about this, but for me, this is the most... This is the most amazing thing. How can you relate invariance on the Calabi-Yau threefold with some completely different, much simpler to me, much simpler invariance on the gauge theory side? It's really amazing mathematically. But what you find is that this Gopuka-Marwaffa, the refined one, which we talked about in the previous slide, where you had these numbers which came from the perverse filtration on the Higgs moduli space up to the conjecture that P and W are the same, should be the same. The generating function we had there is exactly the same as our mixed Hodge polynomial generating
sorry,
function on the right hand side.
There is some rank of the gauge group. Oh no, it was U1. Sorry.
It's U1.
Yeah, sorry.
But what's changing here is the is K, right? It's the partition, right. It's the whole generating function for every K of
because
the.
Use the left hand side for any rank group. What would be on the right hand?
Then it would be, as far as I understand, you would have a different Calabi-Yau, not the local curve, but you have to divide by the...
The gauge theory part is...
But it's unclear if it's related to the Higgs moduli space. That's a more difficult Calabi-Yau. But this is the local curve case is the one which somehow seems to relate in this very profound way with the cohomology of the Higgs moduli space or the character variety.
Can you imagine the engineer
Yeah, yeah, but then you get not a two bundle, but you will get this orb before the bundle over the curve, and then it's not a local curve anymore. It's some local ruled surface or something. And then it's unclear what how to do play a similar game. Anyway, so that's the final connection between between their work and our conjecture. Let me show you one really interesting outcome for us. Was very surprised. Okay, the conclusion is that if you put together our conjecture with Fernando and their conjecture, this refined Gopo-Komarova conjecture and geometric engineering, that gives a very good evidence for P equals W, because these three conjectures together say that the dimension of the graded pieces of the perverse filtration on the moduli space of Higgs bundles agrees with the dimension of the graded pieces of the weight filtration on the character variety. Okay, just finishing, then maybe just show you this last formula and then I finish, is that this formula for genus equals one, for example, when you do the geometric engineering, you will have a completely different way to think about this, and it will turn out to be a generating function of Hirzebruch y genera of Hilbert scheme of endpoints, and then this exponential version is some orbifold version, and in fact this has now been proved in by mathematician Walder, and this is in fact he proves a more general conjecture about equivariant elliptic genera over the Hilbert scheme of C2, and then this reduces to our conjecture when genus equals one. Still there is no combinatorial proof, but this is a very nice geometrical proof after geometric engineering, or formula has a completely different meaning. Maybe I stop here then. Thank you.
It proves your conjecture, I mean, the results by Walder, right?
It proves the conjecture, yes.
So your conjecture now is not a conjecture. This
for genus equals one, yes.
Ah, for genus equals one. And then ST stay for stable, right? T2 equivariant.
No, this is stringy.
What is T?
Stringy. It's a stringy. It's an orbifold. There is a stringy version of the white
orbifold.
And
so physics is also can give some information on hyperholomorphic bundles on Higgs. So I'm wondering, thought about the K theory instead of the homology.
Right. So that's the sort of things what. You and Samson and we studied it a little bit, but the problem with calculating K-theory like equivariant indices on the moduli space of Higgs bundles is the same sort of difficulty that we have calculating the Betti numbers. When you do the localization to the fixed points of the natural C-star action, we don't understand those for n is higher than...
This wonderful E?
Sorry?
This E polynomial, there's no...
Well, that's somehow cohomological. It's
if I may, what I understand is there is a hard work to extract Betti numbers from the two, from the intersection formulas.
And that's another issue, yes. So, but the same, the mathematically we cannot evaluate those equivariant integrals. The difficulty is the same as that we cannot get the Betti numbers, because the fixed point components are mathematically hard to understand. I mean, you can give them a moduli theoretical description, but then you cannot really put your hands on formulas of integrals and cohomology groups of them.
Have you thought about the twisted K theory?
I don't think we thought about that. We haven't thought about the twisting. So we tried, started with András Szemes, we did some computations. We did the NS2.
Actually, the twisted K theory is actually what comes up more naturally.
Okay, but that's more complicated than the K theory. So.
Well, sometimes it's simpler.
Okay.
Right. The twisted K theory, for example, of compact groups is a lot simpler than the twisted equivariant K theory of a compact group is the Philanderer.
Right.
The untwisted K theory of a compact group is very complicated.
Uh-huh. Maybe
that. Sometimes twisting actually makes things easier.
Okay. So.
And the physics, the bundles, at least some bundles that come up very naturally from physics are twisted bundles.
Mm-hmm. In the Dekanescu story, there were no bunches of genuses, right?
No, that's...
How bunches of matter in the UHC, right? It will be one with some matter fields, right?
it's they are working on this, trying to find what the punctures would relate to. And there is a recent work by Aganandich and Shakirov or something, and they talk about cipher fiber three manifolds and refine Chern-Simons invariants. And then that seems to me the right language of trying to extend the physics there. When you do go to the Gopu-Kamar-Wafa conjecture in that context, but I don't know what the gauge theory should be, right? I don't know what's the extra field content in the gauge theory should be to see. So in our story, we have a Riemann surface, we would have punctures, we would put semi-simple conjugacy classes at the punctures which are labeled by partitions. We would have a partition at every puncture, and then we would like to see, as you say, some geometric engineered story when you would put some different fields. And I don't know what sort of fields one must put in there to get the same. As I said, we have a conjecture about the mixed touch polynomial dose in terms of McDonald polynomials. It would be very nice to see it from the gauge theory side.
Maybe we take one last question from Andy.
Actually, he just more or less answered it.
So thank you.
Thank you.